And we're back with Sundance Reel on the weekend with my I'm Rhett Bruff and co-host John
Burdick. John Burdick here.
The John Burdick. and we're back and to start off with the film that I think the indications are this is becoming probably one of the favorites at the festival, but Crip Camp, which is kind of in two parts here, the story of a summer camp in the 70s that turned into a political campaign later on in the 70s, but the person who was involved in both moments, Jim Labrett, a disability rights activist, and you were at Crip Camp in the 70s. Was this the first camp that you attended, or had it been going for a while by then?
I had gone to some other summer camps, and but I had heard about Camp Jened from some other campers. In the summer of 69, there was no Camp Jened because they were rebuilding their dining room. And these campers come and they start talking about this summer camp. And it's like, you hang out with the counselors, they're in the bunks with you. And the thing that really caught my attention was somebody said, you might be able to smoke dope with the counselors. And that grabbed my attention.
Yeah, that was. And how old were you at that time?
That year, I was 14 or 13. Yes.
Yeah,
so, yeah. And but it, you got a sense that it was a whole different world from these other traditional camps, which really didn't treat you with so much love and free rein.
And we are also sitting with Nicole Nunheim, who is the director of this film, Emmy Award-winning producer, director, and writer, co-wrote Emmy-nominated The Revolutionary Optimist and The Rape of Europa, which was nominated for a Writers Guild Award. So welcome to KPCW. And can you talk a little bit about of your film and how you came to put this project together?
Well, first I just want to say that I think one of the most pivotal, powerful things about this film is that Jim and I co-directed it together. And we've been colleagues for 15 years. Jim has been my sound mixer and sound designer, is incredibly talented, and we always had a really wonderful time collaborating and a lot of fun. And over the time that we worked together, he started becoming a more vocal advocate for filmmakers with disabilities and representation for people with disabilities in the media. And we started having conversations about that. And then one day he kind of pitched me this story of this, you know, hippie summer camp. And not only that, he had this theory that there was something about the powerful, liberating experience of that camp that put the fire in the belly for these activists who would go on to really force the implementation of the first disability civil rights laws and the passage of them and, you know, change everything, not just for them and for people with disabilities, but really for all of us. So it is this just incredibly powerful story. And we've sort of structured it as an immersion in the experience of the camp, which shifts the point of view of the audience so that they start to see things differently from the point of view of Jim. And then with that changed perspective, you go out into the world and follow them as they really fight this huge David and Goliath battle and
how they grow up and it's amazing this all of these the people in your film and how much they've had to do with the laws changing and can you speak to a little bit about you had no clue at that point that all of you would become so active in the role of changing America's view on how to deal with people that are challenged in this way.
I mean, even the concept of being political around disability rights was something new to me. But when I got to camp, I met Judy Heumann, who's really considered one of the great leaders of the disabled civil rights movement. And I learned through talking with her and knowing more about her that, oh my gosh, we can actually fight back. She had won a lawsuit against the Board of Education in New York City, who, because she's a wheelchair user, said she couldn't teach. She had her license, but no, you're going to be a fire hazard or you can't discipline your kids. And anybody that's met Judy Heumann knows that she could discipline, you know, the anybody, a Marine, you know, in full gear. She could.
She'll take him on.
Yeah, she'll take him on. So it was very motivating to all of us that were at that camp for because of the nature of that camp that, and it was a product of the times that we started talking about how our lives could be better.
With the kids at the camp, there was a kind of a spirit of being a unique high school class or something, kind of graduates of a particular experience?
You know, sometimes you don't quite know what you're in the middle of when you're in the middle of it, and when you're 15 years old like I was. All I knew was that I was experiencing freedom and acceptance. And really kind of, as Lionel, one of the counselors of Camp Jeanette that's in the film, he's from the Deep South, Lionel said, you know, this is just a bubble of freedom. Mm-hmm. And so I went to public school. I was an experiment in my school district. And so I wasn't really hanging out with people with disabilities outside of camp. So it was a different experience for me, but it was... It really changed my life.
Nicole, how were you able to find the film and the home movies?
Yeah, the footage in this is amazing. Did everybody just have all these, 16mm, 8mm films around to give you?
Well, Jim's dad, luckily, you know, documented his amazing, adorable childhood with a plum, you know. And so some of that footage did come from Jim, from counselors, from, you know, other people's families. It was a tireless effort across about 4 years to find all the news footage that is in the second half of the film. But the heart of the film really is the camp experience. And that footage was shot by a Radical Video Coalition that stumbled upon the camp. They literally were like at a gas station in Hunter, New York, near the camp, and they saw this van full of hippies and people with disabilities, and they struck up a conversation because they had early port-a-pack video equipment.
Okay.
And the counselor said, well, come by the camp and film the Camp Olympics. So they showed up, and the gate was closed, and they said, we're on lockdown. Just wait, hold on a minute. And so the video crew just dropped some acid and was hanging out. And then all of a sudden, a couple of hours later, they came and opened the gates of the camp and said, well, come on in. And the camp was in the throes of this crabs epidemic,
yes,
which, you know, you saw in the film.
Yes.
Yeah. And the, you know, the campers are cracking up and having fun with it, and all the sheets are all over the lawn. And the video crew just, you know, turned on the cameras and started documenting it in this amazing kind of cinema verite-like way, you know. And not only that, they handed a camera to you, Jim, and so Jim actually starts shooting this film
everybody.
50 years ago, you know. And so you had remembered that there was the People's Video Theater at the camp, but it took months of kind of like online sleuthing to track down what was the name of the group. And then we found two of the members of the People's Video Theater, Howard Gutstadt and Ben Levine, were living just a few miles from us in the Bay Area, and they had 5.5 hours of this footage.
Oh,
and so it hadn't been digitized or archived. Actually, they were in the middle of doing that, and they we kind of worked with them to do that, and then just got this hard drive that arrived at the office one day, and there was the whole camp experience, you know, on video.
Yeah, speaking of the camp experience, it was perfect. I went to summer camp, and I was like, this is exactly what happens. You have a love affair that is a camp affair. I mean, it happens at every camp, I think, and showing the universality of that. It didn't matter that these kids were in the disabled category. It was just like, this is camp. And then the games that you're playing, that was one of the most touching moments that I related to as a person. And then also in the schooling, I went to public school and had something with my leg where I had a brace that I had to wear for 3 years, and they wouldn't let me in the school, and they would not let me because it was all stairs. There was no elevator for me to take. And my dad, being a lawyer, cited a lot of what was going on. This is in the 70s. This is 71. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. I mean, obviously, I had a personal relationship to this film, and it's probably why I thought it was so great.
Mm-hmm.
But also in the second half of this film, talk a little bit about 405 and the sit-in and all that just what changed the world as far as looking at disabilities.
Yeah, and set the scene in particular is this is 1977, so we got a new president, Carter, and kind of the bloom is still on that presidency. And so you talk about what happened here. Not many people were paying attention to it. One reporter in all of San Francisco was following the story.
Well, the way this story goes is that Nixon had initially vetoed a Rehab Act in 72, but eventually it was under a lot of pressure politically because of Watergate and other things. He just signed it. And in that was a section that said that really kind of based on civil rights statues from the civil rights movement, and which basically stated that that if you're receiving federal money, you have to be accessible to people with disabilities. You cannot discriminate. So Nixon's administration never published really kind of the regulations, and then Ford didn't do it. And Jimmy Carter ran on saying that he was going to sign them unchanged, these regulations, which were really sweeping. And it became apparent to us immediately, or to the community immediately, that they were stalling. And that they were saying, we need to review this and such. But we had heard that there were lobbyists coming in that really wanted to water it down. And so notice was basically given that there was going to be a big demonstration throughout various cities throughout the country to protest and to try to pressure the Carter administration to sign these regulations. The people in San Francisco realized that nothing was going to change if they didn't apply more pressure, and they decided they weren't going to leave the building. And we're talking about 300 people.
Yeah.
So it's this like epic 26-day sit-in, the longest takeover of a federal building in U.S. history, that was accomplished by many people of diverse disabilities, including a number of the people at the camp, and led by Judy Heumann, who is one of the great leaders in disability civil rights history, who happened to be a camp counselor at Camp Jened, and featured in this footage. I think it's one of the most powerful civil rights stories we have in U.S. history. And the kind of shocking thing is that people just don't really know about it.
Yeah, so it's great that your film is going to bring light to this and let people really have their eyes open, which my eyes were open to this. I didn't know anything about that, and it was amazingly shown. And
that was a surprise to me because I thought I was at the 70s, so I thought I was there. So I don't know what. Do you recall what was grabbing the headlines at the time this drama was taking place? What was going on?
Well,
nationally,
I mean, earlier in 73, when there were Judy and Disabled in Action organized a blocking of an intersection in Manhattan, the Vietnam War was still happening, but they demonstrated outside the Nixon reelection headquarters on Madison Avenue. And so at that time, the Vietnam War was going on. But really, in this time, we were seeing the women's libs starting to happen, gay rights starting to happen, and certainly the struggle for blacks in America and their civil rights happening. And so there was a lot of, this was just in the air.
Right.
But I think it's really kind of a Horton Hears a Who type of story, you know, because it's, not only at the time was this not paid attention to, and as you see in the film, it was a bit of a fluke that it ended up getting national coverage because there was a technician strike that meant the coverage went national and kind of shamed the Carter administration into finally issuing these regulations. But over history, too, it's been neglected and forgotten. And I think that's just because the history and culture of people with disabilities has been really marginalized, you know. And so that's one thing we really wanted to do, is to try to elevate that story and get it out there.
Well, the story of the disabled is a bit unique because when I think about the civil rights, identity group activism, this may be the only group or one of the few groups where one could be an outsider to the group, but a traffic accident, and you could be in that group. And one of your major voices was a woman in an accident who became a paraplegic.
And what I love about her story is that it was through that sit-in that she got her feminist identity too. Like, she found her power as a woman by joining that community and by taking part in that action, you know? So she actually experienced a stronger sense of self-identity and power by joining the disability community. And that's one thing we wanted to showcase too, is that it's an incredible community and you get a lot out of joining in, and a lot of power out of kind of people, you know, different people with diverse experiences and diverse identities. Because as you say, disability can impact any of us at any time, you know, kind of coming together across common cause. And we think that's also just a really inspirational, important story for this time in this country where people are so divided and feel so powerless sometimes about making change.
I mean, it's really a story of activism, and that the necessity for activism in our country has never been greater right now. And that if people can look at our film and say, why aren't I doing something? My gosh, I can be doing more. If we motivate that, we've done a great service, I think.
It was kind of amazing to see Judy Heumann as this little woman is the one who got the attention of a president, who changed national law.
Well, I mean, you know, certainly, and there were many people throughout the country. And really, this fight for the 504 regulations was really a time where a bunch of different organizations for the disabled came together and really into a coalition. And so, I mean, Judy is a huge part of the story, but there were many other people really on the front lines.
Yeah, yeah. And led to probably many, many programs for the disabled, including one that is well known to us in the Park City area. And I think you've had some contact with the National Ability Center.
Oh, it's a great organization. And in fact, we contacted them before the festival, and they've been extraordinarily supportive. I mean, we brought a bunch of people out for the film who are wheelchair users, and they provided some vans for us to use so that we could get everybody around. So, and they've been excited, and we've been excited partnering with them. And I came to Sundance in about 2004, and I got to go skiing for the first time in my life through that program up there.
Yeah, and their equestrian program too. I don't know if you've ridden any horses, but their program has been pretty groundbreaking for our town, our little town.
Yeah, it's just, you can't say enough good things about that organization.
Yeah. Well, to wind up, you've had quite a few screenings already, I think, but you have one on Wednesday. You're at the Library Theater at 6 p.m. and wrapping up this Thursday at the Redstone Cinema at about 9:30 p.m. So very happy to see two representatives from the film Crip Camp and here Jim Labrett and Nicole Newman.
Noonan. Yeah.
And you are in the U.S. documentary competition, so good luck with that. And any final notes about your film that you want people out there to know, other than just the amazing, you know, story that you've brought into light? Both of you? Okay. Sorry to throw you on that.
Would you like to start a Crip Camp again, or these days do we need one?
That's probably a 10-minute answer, but we are developing a very robust impact campaign for the film. And one of those things is to bring people together in a camp-like setting. So to bring new activists along with bringing them in with some of the old guard.
I think the other thing, we need more stories like this, you know? There are so many diverse, different groups of young people with disabilities who are doing incredible activism right now, and we need to hear their stories too. So we hope this film can pave the way for other stories to be told.
And speaking of other stories, stories that you've done, how has this been an experience that's going to change the way in which you go to filmmaking from this point forward?
Well, I mean, for me, the most amazing kind of transformational experience was working with Jim, because I've made lots of documentaries about people who aren't like me, different communities, but to co-direct the film together and to be able to kind of constantly have that that lived experience, you know, that powerful perspective that Jim brought to the equation was really wonderful. It was a wonderful collaboration.
It was. I mean, I've been mixing sound for documentaries for over 20 years, but I've never been a director. And so our collaboration working with Unicole was such a education. And I mean, it was like going to grad school, you know. And well, it was about 4 years, so 4 year grad school
for me too. Yeah,
excellent. And as far as the story and being able to bring the emotions back, I mean, did you just relive all of your camp days throughout the cutting of this film?
Oh my gosh! You know, there's a point in some of the footage where I've got my hand in Nancy D'Angelo's shoulder, and I saw it once, and I got this visceral feeling of how soft her shoulder was. I mean, it really brought things back, and I'm not ashamed to say I cried a lot in the editing room at times, just missing the people and missing the time. And I think we all miss our youth in some respects, but it was great to go back to camp again.
And then did you reconnect? I mean, you've got a lot of them in the film. Were you able to reconnect? And now, had you been keeping up with these people, or was it like any new experiences like, oh, yeah?
Well, there's some people I hadn't talked to like in 45 years or so, but a number of us moved to Berkeley, and I lived in, we both Nicole and I live in Oakland, so I'm familiar with Neil and Denise and a few other folks, but Michael Tannenbaum, who's in the film, I hadn't talked to him in such a long time, and he's in the film in the black and white footage as this kind of big guy right at the beginning of the film. His friend John says, "Do you think how's the line go? Do you think
would you like to see handicapped people depicted as people?"
Right. And then Mike says, "What?"
But one of the incredible experiences too was that some of the people in the film who've since passed away, we were able to find through archival footage some of the story of their journey, you know, finding out that one of the campers had actually, you know, who had very severe disabilities, had figured out some way to move out to California and live independently by finding her pictured in a newsreel, for instance, you know, things right. like that. So yeah, it was a really emotional journey.
Well, thank you for sharing your film here at Sundance. I wish you luck in the competition, and this has just been a very inspiring film for me. Again, can you just repeat where they can catch it?
Okay, yeah, the next couple, this Wednesday at the Library Center Theater at 6 p.m. and Thursday at the Redstone Cinemas at nighttime, 9:30 p.m.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you, Nicole, for being here at KPCW.
Tune in and find out about some of the unknown and talented independent filmmakers from around the world. Join us for the Sundance Reel each weekday morning between 9 and 10. We'll highlight some of the most intriguing films being presented at this year's Sundance Film Festival. That's the Sundance Reel weekday mornings from 9 to 10 through January 31st, right here on KPCW or online, kpcw.org.
The Sundance Reel is brought to you in part by Sundance Institute, presenting the 2020 Sundance Film Festival from January 23rd through February 2nd. And Acura, proud 10-year sponsor of the festival and supporter of independent film and music. Learn more at Acura.com.